like the other members don't want to talk to me.
Yeah, but I do
want to talk at the
to
airport
you.
Waiting for the flight to Durban.
No problem, members. Unfortunately, I have to keep my camera off because my bandwidth is very low right now, and I have to conduct the election of an acting chair, since chairperson is not available today. If members are ready, we can continue with the election. May I ask for a nomination, please, for an acting chairperson?
Good morning, I raised my hand.
Yes, I saw it, and I was just going to acknowledge you, Mrs. Ramadwa. Any nominations from your side?
Can I speak?
Yes, you can.
Thank you, Valerie, Ms. Valerie. I am nominating Honorable Mango to be an acting chairperson.
Are there any seconders? I see your hand is up, Mr. McDonald.
Ms. Corso, thank you very much. I second the nomination, and can this nomination for the acting chair be until comrade until Mr. Zwane, Honorable Zwane returns, so that we don't have to go through this process maybe every day, so until further notice then.
Yeah, no, that will happen. Mr. Mangu, do you accept the nomination?
Yes, good morning, colleagues. I do accept the nomination to be acting chairperson.
May I ask if there are any other nominations? Ms. Kumalo, is your hand for any other nominations, or is it still up from earlier?
Thank you, Valerie. It is not for a other nomination. It is an earlier hand that wishing to second, but I also want to second the proposal by Honorable McDonald to say let us keep Honorable Manu as the acting chairperson for the entire sitting of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. So in the absence of any further nominations, Mr. Manu, please continue with the chairing of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Carroll, sir. Thank you, colleagues. Good morning, Honorable Minister. I saw you earlier. I am not sure if the Deputy Minister is here. Good morning to everybody, support staff, departmental staff, members of the media, and anybody else who might be connected. Thank you for the opportunity to chair the meeting. We have a very long day, and we need to maybe organize ourselves in a better way such that we do not lose any members in the event of load shedding, those who might be having load shedding. The agenda before us, colleagues, is a briefing by the AGSA on the 2021-22 annual report of the Department of Transport, briefing by the DOT, including the DLCA, driver's license, card account, I believe, and briefing by entities being Road Accident Fund, SAMHSA, and PRASA. It's quite a long day, and I do believe that we have the agenda, and I do believe that we do accept the agenda as it is for us to proceed. Before I invite the Honorable Minister to make his introductory remarks, as we normally do, may I check from the Secretariat if all is in order with this agenda? Are there any changes? Have all the submissions been made in good time? Are we ready to go?
Mr. Long, no. At the time that the agenda was dropped, can I please first do the apologies before we do the agenda?
Yes, you will have to hold me by hand. So
no problem.
Please don't feel bad any time where you have to interrupt me.
No problem.
Yeah,
Mr. Sixolo submitted an apology. He has a family issue this morning that he has to attend to. And obviously from Mr. Zwane, then there is, I understood that the minister was only going to join at 9:30 because of another meeting. So I'm not sure if the minister is here or just the online presence. In terms of the agenda, when the agenda was drafted, it was before members went on a constituency break, and that was before the departments were required in terms of the deadline to submit. So I've seen I haven't seen the driving license card annual report table by the 30th. Artia, we didn't receive anything from Artia, and then there was also
Maddie, you in now, eh? Okay.
Ms. Carla Ferreira, please mute yourself. You are disturbing the meeting.
Then there was a letter tabled on about process late tabling on Friday morning in the ATC. I've seen a letter about the road accident fund that was sent late yesterday afternoon to explain the delay in the tabling. I will forward that to members, but by the time it was sent, it was not ATC yet. So I will check the ATC now to see if it will be reflected this morning and forward it to members, as well as the letter explaining the late tabling. So that is what transpired. So Mr. Mangu, the committee needs to decide how it will continue with the road accident fund as part portion of the agenda. But I must remind the members there was a specific request in the previous term to have a meeting with the road accident fund on the audit outcomes that hasn't been tabled in the previous financial year. And that was a meeting that was scheduled to be quite urgent from the members' point of view. I recalled specifically Mr. Hunsinger raising it, and it was supported by the rest of the committee. And then just in terms of the program, there was a request for the session with PRASA to start in the session that was allocated to Road Accident Fund. So Mr. Zwane agreed to it, but members need to also indicate whether that's in order before the session starts. That is from my side, Mr. Mangu. And just in terms of, let me just also inform members in terms of our staff support. Advocate Nell will be here for just a short time. She's on a month's sick leave. So we are not all present for the full duration, unfortunately.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Carlson. Please do extend our well wishes and for speedy recovery to Advocate. Interestingly, I was going to call her immediately after you spoke and you went there, but we wish her a speedy recovery. Let me get this right before I invite. Who is there? I see the hand of Honorable Hunsinger. I don't know who else is handing up.
Ujobe.
Ujobe. Jobe, can I just make this comment? Then I will recognize you. Is that okay?
Okay, Chair.
Okay, Jobe Gabon. I see you, Honorable Hunsinger. I was saying, just to get it right, we are ready with the AGSA. I don't think there is a problem there. However, when the department does present, I'm getting the feeling from Ms. Carol said that the DLCA should not be part of that presentation, and the road accident funds. Those two are specific there, but there was something that was said by PRASA, I didn't really catch it. But those two, I caught them very well. And to the latter end, the suggestion was that Honorable Zwane had accepted that PRASA be slotted in the space of the road accident fund. Am I correct, Ms. Carlson?
That's correct, yes.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, can I invite your comments? I had seen Honorable Hunsinger first. I will then follow with Honorable Ketamabala. Let me check if there is any other hands. I do not see any other hand. As a result, I will invite Honorable Hunsinger to go ahead. Honorable Hunsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to everybody. Chairperson, just a note of practical things. Tomorrow's session, I might not be able to tune in from the beginning, either late or not at all, since I'm in a training session and I'll be driving back at the time where the session is scheduled for tomorrow, as well as for Thursday and Friday. Then with regards to your suggestion on how to schedule and plan for the entities that would not be able to represent, Chairperson, there's little sense in seeing any of the entities if they haven't submitted. We should rather schedule a session then at the end together to engage with all the entities that have not submitted. But in terms of planning, I would suggest and support your proposal to prioritize entities that have submitted their statements so that we use the time and not plan to see someone who are not ready, who haven't submitted my proposal. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Hunsinger. Honorable Ketamabala.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. First of all, I want to congratulate you to be elected as a chair today. I hope you will be in a future chairperson. Chair, I will ask to be assured that at 12 o'clock I have another meeting at 1 in Jimistine. And then on Thursday and Friday I won't be available because I'm going to be admitted in hospital because of some technicalities in my body. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Ketamabala. We do wish you well in that process that you'll undergo. I see further hands. I hope those are the last hands. It will be Honorable McDonald, followed by Honorable Ramadwa. Is there any other person who wants to speak here so that we can close the matter and start the meeting as soon as possible? I've seen those two hands. Honorable McDonald, you will be followed by Honorable Ramadwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me lower my hand. Chairperson, good morning, colleagues. Morning, all the members, the minister, deputy minister, if she's here. Chairperson, I want to second what Honorable Hunsinger said. Let's not delve into entities that have not submitted yet or the submissions are not final yet, Chairperson. So I agree with that, that we pass them over and we continue with our work with the entities that have submitted on time. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable McDonald. Honorable Ramadwa.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I don't want to waste your time. I wanted to second Honorable Hunsinger and Honorable Magde. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sorry, I cut you there. You were saying something.
I am covered.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much, colleagues. It therefore suggests that we will not see Road Accident Fund. We will not hear from the DLCA unless otherwise advised by the Secretariat as she follows up on ATC and what is in compliance with rules of parliament in terms of submission. Having said that, I do notice the minister is in the platform, but as Ms. Carras has said, he might not be ready to make his opening remarks. Can I have an indication from the ministry if the minister is ready, or should we start with the AGSA so that we gather time, we don't lose more time?
Good morning, Chair. The minister will only be ready by 5:30, as I indicated, because he's joining the cabinet committees. So we can start with the AGSA, and then the minister will come in afterwards. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, colleagues. We are starting, therefore, with the AGSA. Can we have an indication who is leading the team from AGSA, and if they could take the floor, and if they could indicate how much time they need so that we can manage our time very tightly, I will appreciate it. AGSA.
Morning, Honourable Chair, and morning to the Honourable Members, and as well as to the colleagues on the line, as well as to the accounting authorities, as well as executive management that might be on the line. Chair, maybe if I could just start by thanking the committee for this opportunity to brief you on the audit outcomes of the transport portfolio. I will also introduce myself. My name is Madidi Malosingo. I am a deputy business unit leader within the Office of the Auditor General. And in the cycle, I was responsible for leading the team that oversees the auditees in the transport portfolio, including the department itself. Honorable Chair, I'm not alone today. I am with my colleagues that are going to be assisting with the presentation today. And with your permission, Chair, I would maybe want to introduce them first. I'd like to start by introducing Carla Ferreira. Carla is an acting senior manager for the Department of Transport, so she oversees the department, including some of the entities that are in the road division. Secondly, I would like to introduce Vinay Rambali.
Ms. Singh. Yes. Just so that the members know who they are talking. As you introduce them, could we kindly ask them just to show a video so that we can put a face, and then you'll continue as such till you finish. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. Already you'd be seeing on the screen, Honorable Chair, Carla Ferreira. As I indicated, she is the senior manager, she's the acting senior manager, rather, that was responsible for the Department of Transport as well as some of the entities in the transport portfolio. I'd then like to introduce Vinay Rambali. Vinay is a senior manager as well in the Office of the AG. He was responsible for the audits of AXA, REF, and CBRTA. I'd then like to introduce Ilza Slaber. Ilza was responsible for the audit of BRASA as well as the Railway Safety Regulator. And then I'd like to introduce George, who supported the team and is the manager in the AG office, and he supported the team on the Sandal audit. George, if you're on the line, if you could also just switch on your camera so that the members can see you. I'd like to also introduce Mary Ann Whitford. Mary Ann is a senior manager that is responsible for transport. Mary Ann just joined us from a long absence of sick leave, so we're very happy to have her back. And in the meantime, Carla was taking the portfolio for us. And then I'd like to introduce Sino Vuyo. And Sino is the manager that is responsible for REF audit. And Chair, that would be all on my side in terms of the colleagues that have joined us today. And again, Chair, I'd like to again thank the committee for the opportunity to really present to the audit outcomes of the transport portfolio. And Chair, as we do that, I would like to start by just introducing some of the concepts that we have applied in conducting the audit in the cycle. First of all, we are going to be presenting on the outcomes of the department and all its 14 entities, with the exclusion of those that are Section 4.3 entities, as well as those that have not submitted their annual reports. You will see in the presentation as we are presenting that we do reflect at a high level those audits that are still outstanding in the context of outstanding annual reports, and those for us were the audit of RAF and the audit of RTIA. If I can just give a brief background to the committee as to the reason why we've not included the outcomes of these entities in the presentation that we'll be doing today. So firstly, with RTIA, we did conclude the audit on RTIA, and as we concluded the audit, the accounting authority declared a dispute on the conclusion of that particular audit. That process was then followed in terms of a dispute resolution process that we have within the Auditor General, meaning that it would have been escalated to the business unit leader, which is myself, and then it would have also been escalated to the head of portfolio for further resolution. The areas of dispute were around some of the areas that had been qualified in that audit process relating to irregular expenditure, as well as to the R2 assets and liabilities. Currently, we have concluded the dispute resolution process from our side. We have communicated the outcome of that dispute resolution process back to the accounting authority. They have, however, indicated that they would like to take the matter further, and we have then referred them to our ethics and risk business unit, which deals with complaints where auditees are not happy with the conclusions on their audit. So from that perspective, on our side, the process is finalized, and there shouldn't be any reason why the accounting authority is therefore not able to table their report, and we have advised that they do table their report accordingly. Secondly, we have the audit of RAF, which is also outstanding in terms of tabling its annual report for the current year, which is the 2021-2022 financial year. In the current year, when we were conducting the audit, it was always at the backdrop of a litigation that had been brought against the Auditor General in the prior year. And in the current year, the accounting authority had actually intended to interdict the office of the AG in terms of finalizing the audit and issuing the audit report. That matter was heard in court on the 20th of September, and the final conclusion was reached by the judge on the 27th of September, following which we then the judgment actually was in our favor as the AG to proceed to finalize the audit and issue the audit report, which we have subsequently done, and we shared the report with the accounting authority. We do believe that the accounting authority is now also in a position to be able to table their annual report, and there shouldn't be anything that prevents them from doing such. I thought it's important to share that as we are sharing these outcomes with you, we then first of all just indicate which auditees we are going to be reporting on and which ones we're not going to reporting on and the reasons thereof. I do note that in the discussion this morning, one of the things that has been discussed is the tabling of the DLCA report. At the point that we were preparing the presentation, we had every intention of ensuring that the outcomes of this entity are included. And from the engagement that we'd had with management, our understanding was that the tabling would have been done at this stage, as there isn't any reason why the entity would not have been able to table. So So you will see in our presentation, we had prepared the presentation on the basis that we would then be engaging the committee on the outcomes of the DLCA. Chair, with that background in terms of the lay of the land of what we will be presenting today, I'd like, before we actually get into the presentation, to actually talk to the committee a little bit about a strategy that we've embarked on as the Office of the Auditor General. And this strategy came with the new AG as she started her tenure. And this is indeed our first year of implementation of the strategy. The strategy in itself, we call it a culture shift 2030. And the strategic context of the strategy comes at the backdrop of us reflecting as the Auditor General in terms of the limited improvements that we see in terms of audit outcomes. And even when we do see auditees that are actually doing quite well in terms of their clean audit outcomes, we have then to really reflect on whether as these entities then are achieving this clean audits, or some of them are struggling with audit outcomes, what is the level of service delivery that we are seeing in the public sector space? And this was also under the guise of the fact that as a country, we have also seen to a large extent that there has been a lot of misuse of there has been a lot of misuse of state resources. And this ultimately impacts the service delivery, and it impacts the lived experiences of our people. And as we reflect on the strategy is really aimed at saying, how do we as the Auditor General play our part through our mandate in terms of shifting the public sector culture to one that is based on ensuring that there is one service delivery, there is performance of auditees against their mandate, and also driving accountability and oversight in terms of the responsibilities that have been vested on us as the AG, as well as the auditees that we audit. So, Chair, you will see that as we do this work, we do realize that we cannot do it on our own. There is a government accountability ecosystem that needs to function effectively to ensure ultimately that government actually achieves in terms of clean audit outcomes, but more importantly around service delivery and ensuring that these auditees actually deliver on the mandates and key performance indicators that talk to their core mandate and the reason why they exist. As we present to you the audit outcomes today, you will see, Chair and Honourable Members, that we have a specific focus around the service delivery aspect of the different entities. We have gone into a great level of detail to look into the alignment of strategic plans of the different auditees against the government priorities as envisioned in the National Development Plan, as well as in the MTSF. We've also gone a little bit deeper in terms of understanding what are the things that are driving performance in these entities and what are the things that are maybe deterring these entities from achieving their key performance indicators and mandates. And as we do that, really what we aim to do is to ensure that when we share this insight of what is driving the performance, we actually enable those that are charged with governance and oversight with the necessary insights to ensure that they interrogate the results of the different entities in terms of achieving their mandate and service delivery objectives. And hopefully through this process, we then enable accountability and oversight, and ultimately we see the change that we want to see in the public sector culture. And as I've indicated, really what we would want to see as the Auditor General is one that there is clean administration, but most importantly, that there is service delivery. So we will be sharing those insights with you today, and we hope that as we engage with you on those insights, that we empower the committee to be able to ask the right questions to the audit team, that will enable that we are able to achieve on this aspect. Chair and Honourable Members, I think I will maybe pause there, and I will allow Carla to take us through the presentation. I thought it was important that as we engage on the audit outcomes, we have this aspect at the back of our mind and it is what really drives the conversation, so that ultimately at the end of the session, we are able to make commitments to say, what is it that we will be able to do together to ensure that there is achievement on this on the service delivery objectives as well as on the audit outcomes. Honorable Chair, I would maybe with your permission allow Carla to then take us through the presentation. We will need about 30 minutes to 45 minutes to do the presentation, after which we will then take questions from the members. Thank you, Chair.
Through you, Honourable Chair, good morning, Honourable Members and Honourable Chair. I would then proceed with presenting the audit outcomes for the transport portfolio for the 21-22 financial year. And I thank the committee for the opportunity to share these audit outcomes. I will then also reflect on the portfolio's performance in terms of service delivery and sector performance, and in finalization, just highlight the key root causes and recommendations that needs to be implemented to improve on the audit outcomes for the portfolio. I want to thank Maddie for the for the introduction.
Sorry, just a minute. I was battling before you started.
Apologies,
I wanted to say to Ms. Bingo, please continue, call whoever you want to continue, call until you announce that you are done. We will not interrupt you.
No, thank you, Chair. I think with your permission, then I'll allow Carla to take us through the presentation. Over to you, Carla.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Maddie. Thank you also then to Maddie for the introduction in terms of outlining the AGSA strategy. I would just like to briefly reflect on the mission and vision of the Auditor General. As the Supreme Audit Institution of South Africa, we have the mandate to strengthen the country's democracy, and we do this through our audit activities, where we then provide independent assurance regarding the use of public funds and those entities who use public funds to ensure that they conduct their financial matters in line with sound financial principles, and also to ensure that they comply with the relevant legal framework, as well as provide credible information relating to their financial and performance information. I would also like to highlight just the, in terms of what Maddie has touched on, in terms of our responsibility as the AGSA in relation to the government accountability ecosystem. Firstly, we have the responsibility as the AGSA to gain the necessary insights and share those insights through our audit activities and through our engagements with the other role players in the ecosystem. We also are responsible for collectively influence positive change to the lives of our citizens through enforcing accountability in terms of those entities that are mandated to provide service delivery to the citizens of the country. And we share the responsibility with the other role players in the ecosystem to improve the lives of our citizens. Against this background, I will then reflect on the audit outcomes for the portfolio. As Maddie has mentioned, we will not be including the audit outcomes for RAF and ARTIA. And since we have been informed that the annual report for DLCA has not been tabled, we will also then not reflect on the audit outcomes for DLCA. If we look at the audit outcomes, there has been a slight improvement compared to the prior financial year, where one entity has moved from the category of unqualified audit opinion with findings to the category of unqualified audit opinion with no findings, that being the Road Traffic Management Corporation. We also have reflected on the movement in terms of the portfolio from the first year of the current administration, and we've noted that there has been an improvement as three additional auditees have joined the category of unqualified opinion with no findings. When we reflect on the auditees that is in the category of clean audits, as it's called, there are six auditees in this category, and we would like to commend them for achieving clean audit outcomes, firstly, as well as the fact that they have, most of these entities have managed to maintain and sustain their clean audit outcomes for two or more consecutive years. What we've noted at these entities is the fact that they have effective governance structures in place, which means that there is a continuous commitment by leadership and management, as well as those charged with governance and oversight, to ensure that they implement the action plans that's required to address audit findings, as well as to ensure that they deliver on their core mandates in terms of service delivery. Going forward, it will be important that these entities focus or maintain their focus on sustaining their clean audit outcomes, but also to ensure that they shift the focus on service delivery and achieving their core mandates through effective and efficient service delivery to the citizens of the country. It will also be important for the bigger entities in the portfolio to replicate the best practices that has been demonstrated by these entities to ensure that we see an overall improvement in the audit outcomes for the portfolio. For Prosite, the overall audit outcome has remained disclaimed, and this is due to a material non-compliance with laws and regulations, as well as the fact that there were material misstatements in the financial statements. However, management did manage to address three of the disclaimer items from the prior year, which indicates a commitment.
Ferreira.
Yes, Chair.
I don't normally do this. It shouldn't be a reflection of how we treat you. That's an apology up front. Also to the whole team. I'm informed that the minister has joined the meeting. However, he has another engagement soon, and I humbly request to ask you to pause. We will start at PRASA. I know it does disrupt your flow and thought process, but I felt we should accommodate the minister, and I profusely apologize for this.
I accept, Chair. No problem.
Thank you so much for understanding. Chair. Thank you so much for your understanding. Honorable Minister, good morning. You are welcome to the meeting. We did start without you because we were notified of your arrival a bit late. We do, however, note that you've got another pressing schedule, and therefore, Minister, would like to invite you to make your opening remarks.
Thank you very much, Chair. And, acting chairperson of the portfolio committee, Honorable Lisa Manu, Deputy Minister of Transport, Ms. Ndisiwe Chukwuma, members of the portfolio committee. In the year under review, the department achieved 63% of its 68 performance targets, translating to 93% performance. Five areas of underachievement were recorded in integrated transport planning, rail transport, road transport, and maritime transport. Corrective measures have been identified and they have been prioritized in the current financial year. The vacancy rate of the department remains unacceptably high In the year under review, the department filled 61 vacant positions, decreasing the rate to 24.31%. Our infrastructure programs performed optimally during the period under review, following the unprecedented effect of COVID-19 pandemic. In the previous financial year, key infrastructure programs implemented by SANRAL, PRASA, AXA, and the PRMG continue to advance labor-intensive methods in our quest to maximize job creation. In line with the engagements with the Parliament in the last year, we have conceptualized the measures to improve performance and obviate underspending. This is a commitment we made when we presented our budget vote earlier this year. The impact of a number of these measures will continue, will become apparent when we present the performance of the third quarter. The underspending in public transport is primarily driven by the taxi recapitalization program. We have seen sign off on a cut-off date of 31st January 2023 for the scrapping of illegally converted panel vans, which will improve the pace of the scrapping process. We're engaging the industry on further measures to give impetus to the scrapping process and positioning of the taxi recapitalization program as an enabler of economic empowerment of the industry. We remain focused on ensuring that the integrated public transport networks achieve their intended objectives of transforming the face of our public transport system. The Auditor General has favored us with a comprehensive report that covers all our entities except for the RAF. The insights of the report are instructive and will assist us in implementing measures that will significantly improve our performance as a sector. Following my engagements with the board of the RAF, the board has since resolved to withdraw the litigation against the AG and pursue alternative dispute resolution mechanism to address the areas of dispute with the Auditor General. This will enable us to get back to the business of transforming the RAF into an entity that is able to provide the much needed relief to those who fall victim to road crashes. This will also clear the way for the tabling of the outstanding reports to Parliament. More importantly, the ability of the transport sector to deliver on its mandate in growing the economy and enabling mobility for citizens to access social infrastructure and amenities is our primary consideration. I am pleased that the number of entities that have achieved a clean audit has increased, with the RTMC joining the other five entities from the previous year. We do acknowledge that on the broader scheme of things, we need to do much more to ensure that our bigger entities, such as AXA, SANRAL and PRASA, reach this level. It is rather disappointing that the PRASA audit outcome for 2021-2022 financial year remains a disclaimer. I'm however heartened by the AG's recognition of the strides we have made in turning PRASA around and achieve better outcomes and place it on a sound footing to deliver on its mandate. Concerns remains about capacity constraints, instability in key positions, and the poor implementation of the audit plans as factors contributing to the repeat disclaimer for PRASA. We're strengthening our oversight instruments to ensure that management and the board pay particular attention to addressing the disclaimer areas and ensure ongoing improvement and in identified areas. We remain seized with the task of strengthening governance at board level. As a result, we are in the process of filling vacancies on the board, which will enable us to achieve a better skill spread. The process to fill the vacancy of the group CEO is equally underway. The strengthening of the management team by filling critical vacancies, while particular attention is being paid to the capacity of the finance and supply chain management, are areas we will require the board to address with urgency while we monitor this closely from the third quarter going forward. These outcomes will inform the strengthening of our shareholder compact with each of our entities and put measures in place to achieve our target of eliminating fruitless and wasteful expenditure and reducing irregular expenditure by 75% by 2024. It is our intention to ensure that all our entities use the factors highlighted in the AG's consolidated report, which contribute to a clean audit as a best practice benchmark moving forward. We remain seized with restoring normalcy at the Road Infringement Agency following investigations that unearthed fraudulent practices that saw the agency parting ways with the former registrar and the CFO. We have deployed an acting registrar to stabilize the entity while the process of recruiting a full-time registrar gets underway. The Pretoria High Court judgment declaring the ARTO Act and its subsequent amendment unconstitutional stalled our progress in the nationwide rollout of ARTO. This affected ARTIA's performance. We have since lodged an appeal to the Constitutional Court on this matter and will be guided by the outcome in the advancing with the national rollout. We are rather disappointed that one of the qualifications areas for ARTIA relates to prior years of irregular expenditure and the ARTO assets and liabilities. We will keep this matter on our radar as a focal point in improving audit outcomes moving forward. The liquidity challenges facing SANRAL remain a challenge, and we have had extensive engagements with the National Treasury on this matter. The final determination on the funding of the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Project will be made soon, and this will go a long way in addressing SANRAL balance sheet issues. Achievement of performance targets in our annual performance plans is critical to ensuring that we change our people's lived experiences for the better. We are concerned that achieving 61% as a sector means we must redouble our efforts if we are to make a meaningful difference to the lives of our people and achieve 100% of our medium-term strategic framework. We are already hard at work in strengthening our monitoring mechanisms in relation to projects delivered through conditional grants. Our improved approach is premised on a more interventionist method of oversight and monitoring to ensure that resources are channeled to their intended purpose. This will be delivered through a project management office that will have a direct line of sight of all these projects that include both roads and public transport projects. In strengthening governance, the AG has made certain recommendations to the accounting officer of the department and the accounting authorities of our entities. This will be incorporated into the performance agreement of the Director General and the shareholder compacts of our entities to enable us to monitor progress in their implementation. In conclusion, we are in the process of appointing new boards for SANRAL, ATNS, AXA, as the terms of the current boards have lapsed. The term of the board of the RAF is coming to an end on 3rd December 2022, and the advert to that effect will be published in the media. We are equally filling vacancies on the boards of PRASA, SAMSA, and SACAR. The acting director general will lead the detailed presentation to the portfolio committee. I am told it's going to be DDG. From public transport. who's going to lead the presentation. Thank you, Acting Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Minister, for those opening remarks. We appreciate them. We appreciate your reflection on a couple of things that I think the committee is seized with. We have, before you joined the meeting, reflected as a committee on those entities that would not have submitted on time. And you have already reflected on the Road Accident Fund. We have also taken a resolution that the DLCA, we will not see it, and the RTIA for reasons that you have already explained. Other than that, Minister, we appreciate your input, and we do believe that you will need to leave the meeting. So at any time that you feel free, please feel free to do so. Even if you do not announce, we do accept it. We will engage with your office, as we as a committee are very concerned about the developments at PRASA, as you've already indicated. We are very concerned, and we appreciate your intervention with the Road Accident Fund, but we would like to further engage on the Road Accident Fund so that we can do what we have to do as an oversight committee. Minister, with those few words, we appreciate your input, and we will allow you to leave at any time you feel free. We will continue. Thank you, Minister. Ms. Kala, you may come back then and start where we left off. I'm sure you had a nice cup of coffee in the meantime.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I was attentively listening to the Minister's message, and I want to acknowledge his message in terms of our presentation as well. Thank you, Honourable Chair. I will then proceed with our presentation. Thank you, Chair. I will then continue with the audit outcomes as of PRASA. As I've already indicated, that PRASA has received a repeat disclaimer due to the material non-compliance findings, as well as the material misstatements in a number of the line items in the financial statements. I have also mentioned that there was, however, three disclaimer items that management did manage to resolve, and therefore evidence that management and leadership is committed to turn around the audit outcomes for PRASA. However, PRASA are still being challenged by capacity constraints, instability, and the late implementation of action plans, which is hampering the ability to meet their core mandate as well as to improve on their audit outcomes. We therefore urge the boards, together with management, to prioritize these disclaimers and to make sure that they monitor the action plans that are being implemented to take the entity forward and to improve on the audit outcomes. We want to, however, commend PRASA for producing an annual performance report that was free from material findings. This basically indicates that PRASA did correctly report on the achievement and non-achievement of the key indicators and the overall performance. However, what is still remaining a concern is the inability of PRASA to deliver and achieve on the key performance indicators. We therefore recommend that there should be specific focus given to the implementation of intervention that will enable the entity to achieve their core mandate and service delivery to the citizens. Similar to the non-compliance findings that were identified, There were, however, a reduction in the non-compliance findings relating to procurement. However, this is basically attributable to lower procurement levels for 2021-22. But it will be important for the entity to implement the necessary interventions to also address these non-compliance findings. As the minister has mentioned in his message, PRASA is in the process of implementing the turnaround plan. They have a number of action plans that they have implemented. What will be important is for PRASA to consolidate these action plans into a comprehensive turnaround plan. And we envisage that there will then be an improvement in the audit outcomes going forward. I will also be reflecting on the audit outcomes relating to specific themes that we have communicated to the various entities in the portfolio. If we look at stability in the portfolio, for the past number of years, the instability at board level as well as executive management level has been has had a negative impact on the governance of the portfolio. As the minister has also mentioned, there has been positive progress in terms of filling some of the key vacancies during the current year. However, we do encourage that the minister then focus on the appointment of the DG at the department, as well as appointing the CFOs at SAMHSA as well as SANRAL, which has been vacant for an extended period, and then also to address the key vacancies at PRASA, which is currently filled in acting capacity, but for to enable the entity to achieve stability, these vacancies need to be filled on a permanent level. When we reflect on the expenditure management for the portfolio, there has been an increase in irregular expenditure for the current year. Irregular expenditure has increased from 1.6 billion to 1.7 billion. There has also been an increase in fruitless and wasteful expenditure from 117 to 291 million. The entities that are the main contributors to irregular expenditure remain PRASA, AXA and SANRAL, and most of these entities need to implement preventative controls and ensure that they monitor compliance with legislation effectively to address repeat reoccurring non-compliance matters. We have also done an assessment of the impact of irregular expenditure and the nature of irregular expenditure in relation to the Section 217 pillars of procurement. And what we've observed is that 84% of the instances, the procurement process was not transparent and competitive. And in 11% of the instances, the procurement process was not equitable and not fair. And this then remains a risk for the portfolio that this these non-compliance matters can result in material irregularities if they result in material loss to the specific entities involved. It is therefore important that the accounting authorities deal with these matters with a zero tolerance approach. In terms of the quality of the financial statements, we had 8 auditees that managed to submit financial statements that were free from material misstatements. This is also an improvement on the prior year from 5 to 8 auditees. There were, however, still 3 auditees that had to correct material adjustments in order for them to obtain an unqualified audit report. The key root cause for the errors and the misstatements in the financial statements remain the lack of adequate review processes by the different responsible role players, being internal audit, the audit committee and management. And again, it will be important for the respective entities to implement a disciplined financial management which is supported by sound knowledge of the accounting, the requirements of the relevant accounting frameworks, and to ensure that the review processes are enhanced to produce quality financial statements. If we look at the stability, financial stability and going concern status of the portfolio, the minister has also referred in his message to the challenges that that is experienced by SANRAL. We've also noted that the revenue generating entities in the portfolio have been severely impacted by the impact of COVID-19. However, we do expect that these entities will recover as the local and global economy is returning to normal. SANRAL have experienced continued liquidity challenges, specifically on the toll theft segment, due to the resistance of motorists to pay toll fees. In the current year, the liquidity challenges were exacerbated by the maturing debt within the 12 months, as well as restrictions on SANRAL's ability in terms of issuing new bonds. It is therefore then important that SANRAL, together with the department, needs to drive the process to resolve the liquidity issues for SANRAL in creating a permanent solution, specifically also in relation to the GFIB matter, as the liquidity challenges are also hampering SANRAL's ability to achieve on their core mandate in terms of service delivery in the long term. With compliance, the compliance of laws and regulations, as I've mentioned, there are still a number of entities with material non-compliance findings, which then impacts on the audit outcomes, and the action plans that needs to be implemented needs to be effective, adequately monitored to ensure that the portfolio address reoccurring non-compliance matters. And together with that, it will be important that there is also sound consequence management processes in place. The IT environment has been experiencing cyber attacks across public sector, and the transport portfolio has also been subjected to some cyber attacks, which made the IT environment vulnerable to cyber security threats, which we have specifically seen in recent past at SAMHSA as well as at RAF, where there were some cyber attacks. What needs to be done to mitigate this threat is to ensure that the security measures in the IT environment at all entities are continuously optimized in terms of the security management. This will ensure that the vulnerability of the portfolio to IT threats are being mitigated. And it will also be critical that where there are vacancies, key vacancies in the IT environment, that those need to be filled. When we reflect on the material irregularities in the portfolio, there were 9 material irregularities that were identified at PRASA in the 2018-19 financial year. And there were 2 potential irregularities that were identified in the 2020-21 financial year at PRASA. For PRASA, the AGSA did issue a remedial action, which did relate to the unfair procurement of the locomotives. Subsequently, PRASA has implemented corrective action, which are being closely monitored by the AGSA in terms of the actions being taken, as well as any disciplinary action. And currently the material irregularities are then considered as resolved. At SANRAL, the two potential MIs that were identified have also been resolved. Just a brief reflection to the committee, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. As you might be aware, the AGSA are conducting flood real-time audits relating to the KZN flood relief effort. Just on a high level, these audits are still in progress, and we will be reporting on these on the outcomes in the near future. What we have observed in terms of the transport portfolio, our focus are specifically on PRASA and SANRAL, as they will be responsible for restoring the rail and road infrastructure that got damage in the floods. And then also we will be focusing on the oversight that is provided by the department who is responsible for the oversight and monitoring of the implementation of the flood relief implementation plan. We have noticed that due to a number of successive activities that needed to be completed before the actual reconstruction could begin, that there was some delays. And this was also attributable to the reprioritization and the approval of budget reprioritization that needed to be obtained. However, we are encouraging the department together with the different role players in terms of the executive authority and the provincial departments to closely monitor the implementation of the flood relief implementation plan. We have noticed the work that has already been done by PRASA and SANRAL on the immediate interventions in terms of the KZN infrastructure. Honourable Chair and Members, I will then now also reflect on the performance, the key messages in terms of service delivery and the sector performance of the portfolio. In this slide, the graph that is the picture is basically an indication of the portfolio's performance in terms of the overall annual performance reports. So it indicates the achievement and the non-achievement of the KPIs that were contained in the annual performance reports. What we have noticed is that in reflection on the portfolio's ability to achieve their key indicators that speak to their core mandate and service delivery objectives, the portfolio is currently behind in their progress on achieving these outcomes, and specifically in relation to job creation as well as the major road and rail infrastructure projects. You will note that PRASA's performance is currently the lowest, as they have a non-achievement rate of 81%, which is concerning. And this impacts on their ability to effectively deliver on their core mandate responsibilities in terms of rail infrastructure and completing their various infrastructure projects. Then as well, we have noted that the oversight and monitoring indicators in most cases will be achieved across the portfolio. However, that doesn't necessarily result in the required corrective action that needs to be taken to address non-performance. What is also a hampering factor in terms of performance is the fact that there isn't always the adequate skills and resource capacity when it comes to effective monitoring and oversight. And this is something that the department would then need to address. However, we did note the minister's commitment in terms of the project management unit that will be created. We have, I think it's important, Honourable Members, that we acknowledge that the transport portfolio is a fundamental role player in the economic recovery plan, specifically in terms of job creation and also service delivery and infrastructure build. And also the fact that the success or the efficiency with which the portfolio meets their MTSF targets has a significant impact on the lived experiences of our citizens. What we have noted is that in most cases, the strategic plans and annual performance plans of the entities in the portfolio are aligned to the MTSF and NDP. However, as I've indicated, they are behind in their progress in terms of achieving the five-year targets. With specific reference to Sanel and PRASA, as they have received 60% of the budget allocation that was allocated for infrastructure build and job creation. What we have noticed is that that the PRASA and SANRAL did not achieve their key indicators. However, there are action plans that are being implemented to provide the necessary turnaround in this environment. We have also in our, it will be the first time that the transport portfolio will be included in the general report in terms of sector reporting and sector messaging. So for this exercise, the main focus was on SANRAL and PRASA in terms of their contribution to the infrastructure build, as well as we have also reflected on the utilization of the provincial road management grant, which also contributes to the maintenance of road infrastructure. So for the sector messaging, that will be our specific focus. It is important to note that the transversal indicators that is used to basically ensure uniformity in planning and reporting in terms of the achievement of government targets has not formally been implemented for the 21-22 financial year. However, the department did continue to monitor the compliance with the DORA, the conditions of the DORA framework in terms of the provincial road maintenance grant in the different provinces, and where there were instances of non-performance, the funds were then reallocated to other provinces. For the current year, 144 million was then reallocated to other provinces where non-performance was identified. We have noted that in some of the provinces there were challenges with the completion of road maintenance projects. This was mainly due to the fact that there were project management challenges, as well as disruptions by some of the communities relating to job opportunities. What we have also noted is that in some of the provinces, they had challenges with underfunding, specifically from the provincial treasuries in terms of the equitable share that did not necessarily match the grant allocation. And these provinces were then mostly dependent on the grant allocation, which compromised their ability to then address the road maintenance backlog that existed in those provinces. This then also resulted in delays in some of the projects, which then emanated into cost escalations due to the delays. If we look at the picture for infrastructure in terms of transport portfolio, 84% of the total of 41.8 billion that was allocated was in respect of transfers to SANRAL, PRASA and the PRNG. Overall, SANRAL has been able to construct quality road networks, and this was mainly attributable to the fact that they managed to implement international best practice and also to align to international standards and conditions. A number of the projects were completed without any significant delays, specifically mentioning the Molotov Road upgrade as well as the Windberg interchange. However, there were some projects that did experience significant delays, and this was mainly due to the fact that Stonerail did not do the necessary commission valuation to assess the cost before new contractors were appointed. There were also delays in terms of the procurement processes, as well as the disruptions by local communities. What will be important for Sunrail is to ensure that they then urgently address these challenges through action plans, and that they fast track the procurement process so that they can avoid any further delays going forward, and also important that they engage with the local communities to prevent any disruptions of projects. PRASA have entered into the Kabela contract, which is the main driver for the rolling stock renewal program. The expected delivery is for this project then to deliver 600 new trains by 2030. The big challenge for PRASA at the moment is the fact that there is a misalignment between the delivery of the new rolling stock fleet and the infrastructure development and modernization program. This then results in a stockpiling of the new trains, and the fact that the new trains are not necessarily fully optimized. What will then be important for PRASA is to ensure that they prioritize the infrastructure development to ensure that the new fleet are fully optimized and that the citizens can then take advantage of the rail infrastructure and new trains to ease their lives. PRASA has also been targeted by vandalism and theft, which also then causes a threat to the infrastructure. This was especially prevalent during the COVID-19 period, and measures have been put in place by PRASA to reduce the impact of the vandalism. What will need to be done is that PRASA would need to continue to engage with law enforcement agencies, as well as work together with Transnet to ensure that the security program is fully implemented to reduce the impact of the vandalism on the rail infrastructure. In our assessment of the PRMG grant and the utilization, we have also identified challenges with project management and procurement delays, which then also resulted in delays of some of the projects. However, the department is continuing to monitor the compliance of the provinces with the conditions of the DORA Act. And it would then be important for the department to just strengthen the oversight capacity to ensure that the oversight does then translate into improvement of project delivery in terms of the PRMG grant. Overall, it is important to note that the significant underspending on the capital budgets at the key infrastructure entities does have a negative impact on the service delivery, as well as on the economic growth. We also need to acknowledge that delayed projects and poor road infrastructure prevents the seamless mobility of the citizens and prevents them from fully utilizing work opportunities. It also causes increased transport costs for the citizens and results in unnecessary time spending in traveling if our overall transport infrastructure does not meet the expectations and contribute to the growth of the economy. Finally, honourable members and honourable chairperson, I would just like to highlight some key root causes and recommendations. I have already mentioned the key root causes and recommendations during the presentation. However, I would just urge the executive authority as well as the accounting authorities of the different entities in the portfolio to address the key root causes that has been mentioned, and to implement the necessary action plans to address these root causes and to capacitate the different entities to ensure that there is improvement in the audit outcomes. We as the AGSA will continue to partner all the role players in the ecosystem to ensure that the transport portfolio does contribute as expected to the economy of the country. It will also be important to note, and we acknowledge the commitments that was made by the minister in his message, and it is important that the audit, that the portfolio committee then provides the necessary oversight in terms of the implementation of the various action plans to address audit findings and to make sure that the key players in the transport portfolio is enabled to deliver on their core mandates in terms of service delivery. And we want to assure the portfolio of our continuous support as well to facilitate that accountability and to ensure that we enforce positive change that will improve the lives of our citizens. Chair, honourable members, I thank you for the opportunity, and I would then pause here and allow the committee to ask questions on any matters that need more clarity. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kala. That was very precise, to the point, colleagues. There is the report. Ms. Singo, anything? Are you covered before we open up to the members?
Thank you so much, Chair. I'm covered. Maybe just a couple of things that I would want to emphasize as we close our presentation. So having gone through the audit outcomes and having gone through the performance of the different entities and the insights that we've shared, there are some critical aspects that we feel that we need to elevate in terms of the areas that need to be addressed going forward. And I think the minister as well in his opening remarks also addressed some of the areas that I'm going to highlight. And the first one is really around ensuring that there is stability in key vacancies and critical positions are filled. It is important that this receives the necessary priority so that the audit action plans that are put in place actually can become effective, because what we've seen as well is that you can have the best laid out plans in terms of audit action plans, but if you do not have the capacity to effect those plans, in most instances we found that there is a lack of timely implementation of those plans, as well as in some instances those plans not being implemented at all. One of the key things that is impacting the portfolio in terms of performance is around procurement challenges, whether it be around the planning that needs to happen in the procurement space, or whether it be relating to awards that are cancelled or procurement processes that are not completed in a timely manner. So it is quite important that the portfolio looks at what are the plans that they're going to put in place to ensure that delivery and the delivery on infrastructure projects are addressed. So that is something that needs to be taken into account, especially going into the new cycle and new audit action plans being revised. So the portfolio must look into how do they then deal with the procurement challenges. Another aspect that needs to be critically addressed, Chair and Honourable Members, relates to the capacitation of the project management unit as well as the supply chain management unit, and in some entities, the finance unit, because those three units actually impact directly on the ability of the auditees to achieve on their mandates and to ensure that they deliver on their projects. So the capacitation of this unit is quite critical. In our engagements with the minister, he did make a commitment around ensuring that there will be capacitation on project management units, and I think he has reiterated that commitment in the engagement today. There needs to be an enhanced level of oversight on the infrastructure project, and I think as we were going through the presentation, one of the key aspects that we've seen that impacts the delivery of infrastructure projects is really the oversight over those projects, whether it be in the project management unit or within management itself. So that is another area that needs to be dealt with as a matter of urgency. The action plans, and I think Carla has spoken to it quite clearly in terms of audit action plans as it relates to the audit outcomes themselves, and I think that is very critical to ensure that the matters that we are raising here should be actually addressed in the audit action plan. And what is important around ensuring that these matters are addressed is ensuring that the department as well as the different entities actually go into the detail of identifying what is the root cause of this matters continuously coming up and being identified in the audit process. The internal audit function as well as the audit committees then become very critical in ensuring that there is adequate monitoring and review of those audit action plans and where corrective action needs to be taken, that needs to also be done in a timely manner. As you would have seen, Honourable Members, one of the other things that we've spoken about today is the issue around the increased level of irregular expenditure. And that is another thing that needs to be addressed, especially as it relates to ensuring that the preventative controls around supply chain have to be implemented and have to be adequately monitored. And in instances where people are found or staff is found to not comply with this prescript, there should be the necessary consequence management that takes place. We have seen some entities doing very well in terms of ensuring that there is consequence management, but we've also seen that in some entities that there is a need for to improve the consequence management that takes place for those that are found to be wanting in that space. And lastly, Chair, we have reflected on the progress against achieving the MTSF indicators, and I think it's important that progress is actually made in terms of achieving this indicator, and where we find that some of the indicators are really lagging behind, that necessary action plans and turnaround strategies are put in place. And specifically as we relate to some of those aspects, one of the things that we think should be done is an assessment of where the portfolio is in terms of achieving those targets, and then obviously secondly, to ensure that the necessary implementation then is put in place. Chair, I would like to pause there, but I thought it's important that as we deliver our message that we elevate the parts that I've just also highlighted in ending our presentation. I will then pause there, Chair, and allow the members to pose any questions that they may have for us or any additional comments that they might have for us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Singo and Ms. Carla. Appreciate it. I see the arrival of the woman AGSA is reflective even in the teams that are going to the auditees. Colleagues, there is the AGSA presentation, very precise. I allowed them the luxury of time because it forms the basis of everything else that we are going to do. I have already seen hands coming up, which I will call out now, but I do want to draw colleagues' attention to the fact that as we engage, we are also looking at producing our BRRR report. So as we all know, we might be frustrated by many things that we might have raised before that didn't happen. But in the midst of that frustration, I humbly request that we try and assist our support team in raising observations, in raising recommendations. Some of them might be repeat, regrettably, but I think that's something else as a committee will have to reflect on and see how best do we address these. We'll now recognize the following hands in the following order. I will start with Honorable Makosini, followed by Honorable Ketamabala, and last but not least in this round, I will then recognize Honorable Hunsinger. Honorable Makosini, you are first.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Let me also applaud you for being the Acting Chair. My first question would be, after really considering the presentation, the underspending was caused by the slow pace of scrapping of recapitalization of taxes. I would like to know what were the actual problems that led to the slow scrapping of taxes, and what measures do you, Minister, have in place to improve the scrapping of taxes? Central board is to be appointed very soon. What criteria different from the past do you think will apply to appoint the new board that is to be active and functional? ALSA has received a repeat of disclaimer. How are you intending to improve on this maladministration? And the key performance indicators are unable to achieve its mandate. Are we having men and women who are qualified to do the work? If not, why can't we fire those that are unable to do the work and bring competitive people or persons to PRASA? Finally, the road maintenance projects, it is said, were not completed because of disruption of projects by the communities due to hiring performance procedures. Why can't we follow correct measures of hiring communities and listen to what they want to be done? Because this is about the service delivery to the same communities. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Ketamabala, please go ahead.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, first of all, I want to appreciate the report from the AG, because actually it is an eye-opener to us to understand the operations of the department and the failure of the department and the failure of the entities of the department. But because I know that they just highlight what they have audited to us, I guess most of our question will be directed to the entities and to the department. But my question, just only one question that I want to understand from the Auditor General, because they do have powers to action some of their recommendations to different entities and the department. But it seems that there's nothing that has been done by them. So now I'm trying to check their ability to do their work, to enforce their recommendations. What system or mechanism do they have to do that? Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Hunsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, as in previous years, which number 8 now, again, it is a very frustrating occasion. I do appreciate and thank the presentations by Madam Singo and Madam Ferreira. Chairperson, it is frustrating because we have heard this for so many years. Repeat findings that keep on repeating. And again, it is frustrating because this presentation from the Attorney General has been presented in a style where they seem and have a attitude of not being part and uninvolved in this process, and merely a messenger of everything that's wrong, and the same things are wrong every year. I think they are confusing their role of being neutral and independent, because a lot of things are very wrong for very long already. And I want to focus on one of our core objections that the Portfolio Committee has driven for quite some time. And that is the misalignment between what is presented from them as clean audits and what people actually experience. So clean audit versus service delivery. And this talks to measurement and what is measured and indicators. And I still maintain, and I'll repeat it here today, that what we have seen and what we experience in the role of the Attorney General in audits is a very one-sided performance evaluation, and that it does not contribute in a meaningful manner in improving service delivery. And ACSA is probably a good example, where it is presented that they have achieved 90% of their targets, but they are one of the three main contributors in irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. And in years before, the Road Accident Fund achieved clean audits, whereas it is well known that over 300 billion in outstanding claims are due to be paid for victims in road crashes. This misalignment is something which cannot be presented in a way and in a style which we have experienced yet again this morning. We've been entertained with phrases of hopefully, we would want to see, and we are sharing insights. It cannot be that the main auditor and evaluator of the internal workings of entities stand on the sideline and comment as if they are not involved. The same people have evaluated the same entities for a number of years, and then they come here and present in a quasi-clinical and not involved manner. And I find that, again, very, very frustrating. In looking at the mission of the AG again, I claim that this is a failure. It is a failure because the democracy is not strengthened, and it hasn't been strengthened through the efforts of the AG. Oversight has not been strengthened, and accountability also not. And I see it as an absolute failure in the mission of the AG, since they are the ones looking at the same entities, same books every year. And preventative controls, as an example, have been absent for many years. And again, they would report about this in the same manner. The new just word seemed to be ecosystem. And just in reflecting from the diagram that we've seen, where it's about influence, insight, and enforcement, where is the influence of the AGSA? Where is the insight of the AGSA? And where is the enforcement of the AGSA in protecting the ecosystem, in promoting and strengthening democracy, oversight, and accountability? I see the components, but I do not see the impact, not at all. And in the number of years that I've been involved with these entities, I haven't seen any progress. There should not be a target setting for the reduction of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. There should be zero irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. Finish and clear. There shouldn't be any tolerance to allow a target setting of something like to minimize it with whatever percentage going forward. There should be zero irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. Finish and clear. It should not be tolerated, least of all, allowed to become part of a key performance indicator. It is highly disappointing that there was a 150 million increase in fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and the same, also 150 million rand increase in irregular expenditure. This is shameful, and it cannot merely be brushed off as something that will be attended to, and that there is a turnaround plan for PRASA. I've seen 8 turnaround plans, and we've experienced numerous occasions where presentations have been made about this. I also find it amusing that is presenting explanation about infrastructure. It should be the entities that reply and reflect on infrastructure, not the AG. So I would like to know from the AG, listening to what I've just said, how are you going to improve your evaluation? How are you going to improve strengthening democracy? How are you going to improve your oversight function? And how are you going to improve accountability? If they could answer me on those three, I'll be really happy and encouraged. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Hunsinga. Just on a lighter note, it's the Auditor General, not the Attorney General. but I will have a second round of questions. I've already seen hands. But AGSA, Ms. Singo, I would like you to tackle these ones. The ones of Honorable Shabang were at the beginning. I would, unless you are tempted to park them, because they are more directed at the minister's opening remarks. He has since left. However, the department will be presenting, and I hope that most of the things will be into the department to answer Honorable Shabangu's questions. So if I would ask you to concentrate in the main to Honorable Sithole and Honorable Hunsinga, then I will take a second round, which will be the last one. We really have gone over time. Thank you, Ms. Singo.
No, thank you so much, Honorable Chair, and to the Honorable Members as well for the questions that have been posed. Chair, I do agree with you that the first set of questions that were posed, I think they were more directed to the Honorable Minister. So I will then allow the Minister or the Minister's representative to then deal with those particular questions.
The second question that was asked was really about how is the AGSA, given the additional powers that have been vested upon us, how are we actually enforcing those powers, and how are we making sure that our recommendations are then taken into account. So I think, first of all, maybe the one point to clarify is that, yes, indeed, the powers have been vested on us in terms of the Public Audit Act, which saw the introduction of the concept of material irregularities. Now, when a material irregularity has actually been identified in the audit process, that would naturally mean that there has been some sort of non-compliance that we've identified as the Auditor General. And then we assess that non-compliance in terms of whether there has indeed been a financial loss as a result of that non-compliance. In the transport portfolio specifically, we have identified those material irregularities, and those have been identified in the FRASA environment. And as we identify those material irregularities, we do notify the accounting authority, and the recommendations that we make are then binding. In the FRASA environment, we have had a number of material irregularities that have been issued as part of enforcing our mandate and our powers. And in light of that, we have seen some progress in terms of the accounting authority addressing those particular material irregularities that have been identified. And here, that is indeed part of us exercising those powers that have been vested in us as the AGSA. And I think it is just important that we confirm that indeed, as the AGSA, we are indeed utilizing those powers. In terms of the other areas of non-compliance that have been identified during the current year process, after the audit process is concluded, we then go an extra step. And in that extra step, we then evaluate again whether financial losses have actually occurred in terms of the non-compliances that we've identified. And that is a process that we'll then be undertaking as we conclude, as we have concluded this audit cycle. And if there is any that we identify, those will then be reported in the next cycle. So that is just to assure the members that we have utilized the powers, we have issued those material irregularities. They are actually in the process of being processed by the accounting authority. We are continuously monitoring the progress in terms of those remedial actions that we need to be put in place. And from that perspective, for the next cycle, we will again do the similar assessment and report any material irregularities again, leading to our recommendations being binding if we do identify that there has been financial losses that have occurred. So I hope that I've addressed that particular question, but if there is any follow-up questions, then we will certainly look at maybe providing more clarity. I do have Ilza on the line with me. She is the auditor at FRASA. If the committee would like more information in terms of how the accounting authority has dealt with those material irregularities that have been issued, we would then be more than willing to give that context to the committee. The second batch of questions coming from Honorable Hansinger are relating to really how do we as the Auditor General support the different auditees in terms of the audit work that we do. We talk a lot about insights that we generate through the audit process. We talk about influence and we talk about enforcement. So the enforcement leg, I've spoken about it in terms of how we have exercised our powers to ensure that where the necessary preventative controls have not happened and there is non-compliance that is identified and the accounting authorities have not done what they're supposed to do, what is it that we do as the Auditor General? And ultimately, what happens is that if the other accountability structures within the accountability ecosystem fail,
that is when we then use those enforcement powers. But ideally, the first point of reference is to ensure that management and the accounting authority put the necessary controls in place to ensure that indeed there is no non-compliance and there is a clean administration. Once that has failed, that is when we will come in with the enforcement part. So it is really to complement what would already been done by management and those charged with governance. Honourable Chair, I think as I'm addressing this particular question, when we opened the session, I did speak about our new culture shift strategy, which is aimed at really assessing the aspects that relate to service delivery. And in doing this, when we generate this insight, and we have certainly done that in the audit process, we do share those with the accounting authority, the audit committee, internal audit, and we work hand in hand with those stakeholders to ensure that there is improvement in the audit outcomes. As we do that work, and as an example of the areas that we look at, once the audit process is finalized, we do review the audit action plans to assess whether these audit action plans are actually fit for purpose in terms of ensuring that they address the deficiencies that we've identified in the processes. And we do share the insights of those root causes and the suggested initiatives to implement to improve this audit outcome. So that is something that we do as the audit office to ensure that we support those charged with governance in terms of improving the audit outcomes. Now, what then becomes a challenge is, in as much as we can review the audit action plans that are geared towards improving this audit outcomes, the challenge that we're sitting with is that a lot of these institutions are dealing with capacity challenges. And what we've spoken about earlier in the presentation is that when you've got capacity challenges, you can have the best laid out audit action plan, but you will then struggle to implement that audit action plan because of the capacity challenges that you have. So it then affects the impact that you would like to see in terms of the successful implementation of that audit action plan. So ours really is to say, as part of the audit process, let's review the audit action plan, let's assess whether those action plans are fit for purpose, and let's advise the internal audit and audit committees in terms of what we believe would actually work in addressing this aspect. The second part that we do is that where we identify challenges, for instance, in the Brazil environment, we went in and we realized that there were challenges with assets. And one of the recommendations that we did is that we would want to come in early in terms of those environments and do what we call a status of records review. Now, a status of records review is one that is intended to be an early warning system to those charged with governance and to management to say, we are foreseeing this particular challenge. We believe that if this is not addressed, this will lead to either stagnation in audit outcomes or regression in audit outcomes. And we do this across all the audits where management are ready for us to come in and do an interim audit and early audit. We do that as part of supporting the process. And that's important that we do that because we also don't want to sit by the sidelines and watch and come in as the police afterwards to say, these are the aspects that we would have needed to address. So that is one way that we support the different entities and the departments in dealing with the challenges that they have. The last part is we've introduced another concept called real-time audit. And you would have seen as Carla was doing the presentation that as it relates to the KZN Relief Plus and in other areas as well, we then start going in early into the process and saying, as we're actually implementing this KZN Relief efforts, how do we then as the Auditor General assist the department and the different entities in terms of ensuring that where we can identify challenges in the process early on, we do certainly do that. And the challenge that we always have is that in some instances, and as we've reflected here today, you do have challenges where things are not implemented on a timely basis, and that ultimately impacts our ability to provide our insights in a timely manner. So overall, what we have done as the AGSA is that we have shifted our focus to not only deal with audit outcomes, but to also deal with service delivery aspects. And I think as Honourable Member was reflecting, why is Auditor General reflecting on the infrastructure and not the department? what we aim to do as the Auditor General is we go in and we look at what are the things that are driving key performance indicators for the different departments. And in transport, infrastructure delivery is one of those key areas. We look in terms of how the projects are being run, whether there's project management issues and so forth. The idea is that we empower the audit committee, management, and the board with insights that would say, in this particular project, we are seeing these particular challenges. Please attend to them and address them to ensure that ultimately we do see the service delivery that we want to talk about. And that is part of us not standing by the sideway and looking in while these projects are ongoing or are being stalled for whatever reason. So it's important that we give that real-time insight into the challenges that we see. As we close off our presentation, we gave about 5 key things that we believe are key to ensuring that there is service delivery and the audit outcomes are actually going to improve. And we do really believe that if everybody that is involved in this accountability ecosystem takes their space and do what they need to do in terms of ensuring that the preventative controls are in place, the monitoring is in place, and the oversight is in place, we will certainly see the change that we want to see. What is important is that as we give this insight, what are then the actions that are going to be taken by management, by the board, by the audit committee, as well as the portfolio committee. So if we say there's capacity challenges in a particular institution, how is that message received? Because it is a particular insight that we're sharing, but how is that received? And then what are the actions that are taken? We can then have a conversation around, are we seeing progress or are we not seeing progress? But ultimately, these insights we share with the committee to empower the committee to ask the right questions in terms of progress on this particular matter so that we can ultimately see the improvement in audit outcomes and in service delivery. I will pause there, Honorable Chair, and maybe we can take the next round of questions. And if there's any clarity that's required, we'll certainly give that as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Singo. Colleagues, we are not doing very much well on time. And please remember observations, recommendations. I will take the last round of questions, and we need to find a better. It's always difficult to engage so much once in a while with the AG. I'm sure if things were equal, we could have more engagements to unpack more of these things rather than try and do them at this point in time. That's just a comment. I will recognize Honorable Ramadwa to go first, followed by Honorable McDonald. Thereafter, the AGSA, then we'll close this matter, colleagues, and move on. Honorable Ramadwa.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, let me start by welcoming and join my colleagues who are appreciating the presentation. Honorable Chairperson, I've been covered by both Singo and also yourself, because my question was how many times do the AG meet the department? And I wanted to indicate that we can't wait now and get recommendations, but we, as the portfolio committee, after they have identified some issues that need also the oversight of the committee, I think we can meet with them. It's what you have already said. As she has indicated, that they are early warning systems that they engage the department. So that was my question, and she has answered that, and you also indicated that. Thank you, Chairperson, and I'm covered.
Thank you very much. Honorable McDonald, you are last.
Thank you, Chairperson, as I lower my hand. And also, I would like to thank the AG for the presentation. I was mostly covered by the AG's response to the extended question of Honorable Hansinger. I also would like to congratulate the CBRTA on the 6 years clean audit and the South African Civil Aviation Authority on 3 years, also the other entities. I just wanted to ask the AG two questions on PRASA. Does the AG not think that we should, that from their side, they should start instituting consequence management? You know, in private sector, if you get audited and there's funky business in the audit, people get fired, people get sent to jail. That's the type of attitude we should be having with these entities now. And then on the other one, there's I was reading the financials of a couple of years, the last 2 years of this AXA, and I see no provision for the ruling that was made, I think, yesterday regarding the SARS payment or the audit of the SARS thing. Does the AG know that about the SARS additional payment that they have to make now and the auditing process, and have them as AXA made provision for this payment and penalties? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, colleagues. Messingo and your team, the last bite, and then you will give your parting shots.
No, thank you so much, Chairperson. I think maybe let me start by appreciating your comment, Chair, and from Honorable Ramadan, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, that there is maybe certainly a need for us to engage on a more regular basis. And we would certainly, as the AGSA, welcome the opportunity to engage with the committee on a regular basis, and maybe we can discuss how we do that offline as part of empowering the committee in terms of ensuring that it is able to deliver on its function of oversight. I think the second part, maybe as part of also responding to that question, is also just to assure the committee and the honourable members that we do engage with the department on a regular basis, and we do engage with the different entities on a regular basis as part of that continuous engagement as we try and assist them in terms of improving the audit outcomes. So those engagements are continuing and would continue to happen. I think in my last engagement actually with the DG of Transport, we were actually wanting to have even more frequent engagements and to discuss the matters that affect the portfolio. So we'll certainly continue with that. Honourable Chair, I think as I deal with the question, and I'll start at a high level, and I'll ask my two colleagues to come in. So the one is the consequence management around PRASA. I think we have indicated that, one, from an AGSA perspective, where we've seen that material irregularities have occurred, we have used our powers and we have issued notifications to the accounting authority so that what we are identifying as part of the non-compliance is gets addressed by the accounting authority, and in the failure to do so, then we do exercise our powers in terms of issuing remedial actions. And I'd like Ilse to maybe just come in and give the committee a little bit of background in terms of the ones that we've issued and the progress in relation thereof. The second part relates to the ruling on the VAT matter, on the tax matter as it relates to SARS, and I'd like Vinay to maybe deal with that particular question, and then I'll come in here after they've completed to just close on our session. Thank you. Over to you, Ilza, through you, Chair.
Uh,
Are you on mute, Ilse? Oh,
yeah, go ahead, please, the team, and finish up.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. To just touch on what Maria said in terms of the material irregularities that were identified at PRASA, so there is one of them that's currently still under investigation by the SIU under proclamation. That matter has not yet been finalised, and we are awaiting the outcome of the SIU investigation. Then we have also resolved the matter that Carla has referred to in terms of the locomotive. We have been tracking that for a number of years, and we have been at this point satisfied that PRASA is taking all the action that they can possibly take in regards to that matter. The whole thing has not yet been resolved, but we are tracking the ongoing implementation of further actions that's required to bring the matter to a close. We have had this extensive deliberations with PRASA in this regard to say that we are currently happy with what we've seen on the ground. However, if we at any point in time feel that the actions that they are taking is stalling, we do then reserve the right to bring back the material irregularity. So we will be, from an internal audit perspective, just tracking that from an audit team view and making sure that those actions get implemented. Then there are a number of other matters that all of these material irregularities really speaks to procurement-related matters that has been identified, and PRASA has actually then gotten FIU in internally through a secondment agreement to investigate these matters. And if you do go and look at the audit report, Chairperson, we do not have a lot of time on our hands, so I'm not going to deal with them individually. However, you would be able to see that the disciplinary action in terms of those non-compliances that the FIU have confirmed is in progress. Just generally in terms of consequence management, I'm also sure that when PRASA presents, they will be able to give the committee accurate statistics, because there are quite a number of officials on suspension and undergoing disciplinary action as we speak, speaking to the whole issue surrounding consequence management and what happens to people that then transgress. I think just worth noting that obviously we've had a lot of deliberation on the instability at executive management level, and also the kind of general instability in the entity, which makes these implementation of the consequence management a bit harder, given that the people that were responsible might not necessarily then still be a part of the entity. So that also speaks to doing these things in a more speedy manner. But with regards to the material irregularities, then we are at present satisfied that PRASA is dealing with these matters and it is being tracked on a continuous basis. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Ilse. Maybe through you, Chair, if Dine can come in to deal with the ACSA issue.
Thanks, Mari. Once again, good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Thank you, Honourable McDonald, for that question on ACSA. Just a bit of background, it relates to an audit that was conducted by the South African Revenue Service on the 2011 tax returns that were submitted by ACSA, on which certain deductions were claimed and found to be not allowed in terms of the Tax Act by SARS. So those were revised assessments that were issued, and an objection process followed thereafter, which ACSA objected to those assessments and the disallowance of those deductions. The court ruling that came out yesterday and the newspaper article yesterday deals with the issue of, can you bring in additional grounds for objection? And the court ruled that you're not allowed to do it. You stick to your original grounds for objection. And that's what's going to have to happen, that ACSA did object. They would have to then stick to the original grounds for objection. In terms of the specific question, Honorable Chairperson, you will note that in the case where SARS lodges or issues you with revised assessments, it's a principle of pay now and argue later. So what would have happened is that ACSA would have paid those penalties and interest and also the additional assessments, and then go through the objection process. Should they be successful, then obviously claim the refund. So if you go back a few years, Honorable Chairperson, you will see in the financial statements of ACSA that they did pay over those revised assessments related, as I said, to the 2011 financial year, and also the penalties and interest. And that penalties and interest, if you go to the financial statements, your seed was classified as fruitless and wasteful expenditure, pending the outcome of this whole objection process with SARS. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Ms. Singo, you can then wrap up.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you to Elza and Vinay for providing those responses to the committee. Chair, in closing, we would like to thank the committee for the opportunity to come and share the audit outcomes. And as we close, Chair, we have shared quite a bit of insight in terms of what is driving performance against the mandate for a lot of these institutions. We have shared a lot of insights in terms of what we recommend needs to be done. And we really hope that as we share this insight with the committee does adopt our recommendations, so that we can really start seeing the improvement that we want in service delivery. As indicated, we do welcome the opportunity to engage with the committee going forward so that we can unpack further some of these aspects and also how best we can support the committee and the accounting authority. And as I close, Chair, ultimately the objective is we want to see functioning auditees, state institutions, because ultimately that talks to whether they are able to deliver on their mandate. From our perspective, clean administration should be the base. And after clean administration, then we should then be talking about whether these entities are delivering on the mandate. And we hope that through the insights that we've shared with yourselves, we have empowered the committee in terms of what are the things that are hampering these entities from achieving and what is it that needs to be done. And we hope that in our future engagement, we'll then be tracking some of the commitments that will be coming from the committee in terms of ensuring that we ultimately see these entities performing at the level that they should be. Maybe with that, Chair, I'll pause here and allow yourselves to close our session. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Team AGSA. We truly appreciate your response to the questions. As I said, that engagement with the AGSA are always interesting, and I don't think there will ever be a time where you can say everything has been exhausted. But in lines with what we need to do as a committee, colleagues, the AGSA presentation has significantly proposed some recommendations on what they believe the committee should do. And I want to check if we are in agreement with those recommendations, that we can adopt them as part of our report. And secondly, colleagues, in particular, Honorable Shabangu had raised the issue of action regarding the poor performance of PRASA. And it is my view that the committee hearing you colleagues is recommending that we zoom into PRASA. In particular, we require a report from PRASA, the board, as to what is being done to address this, and that we can give it a time frame, which we normally do in terms of our deliberations. I don't know, colleagues, before we go off this matter, if there is any particular thing that you feel could come out as a strong recommendation out of this presentation, then we could step down on this matter. I do not see any show of hands, and I therefore assume that my summary is acceptable to the colleagues, and thank the AGSA for the presentation and taking the questions once more. Colleagues, we will then go to the DOT presentation, What I need to do is to, as the we were told by the minister, DDG, I think it's Mugonyama will be leading, as he gets ready and they start loading the necessary presentation, I need to bring the colleagues' attention to some urgent matter that has come to my attention regarding an international maritime organization conference starting in Durban. I think it's tomorrow on the 12th to the 14th, of which the support team has been trying very hard to secure traveling and everything and the necessary approvals. We are working on it in the background, and my request to colleagues, it is quite short notice, but the program is such an enriching program that if all the approvals have been achieved, it would really be enriching to the committee or a delegation of the committee to be part of this conference. About 139 countries are represented. It would be amiss that a hosting country's portfolio committee is not represented there. So my request, colleagues, is that offline, engage with the secretariat, in particular Ms. Mashati or Ms. Carlson, to indicate in the event that we have all the necessary approvals, your availability, and be able for them to continue. It's very short notice. It's just one of those things, colleagues, that we need to do if we are able. If not, we would have tried. So offline, colleagues, we are not going to discuss it. I'm sorry, but just engage with the secretariat so that they have all the information of who would be available in the event that all the necessary approvals have been granted to us. We are aware of our responsibility during the week, and that has been taken into consideration in considering this trip. Thank you very much, colleagues. As we go to the department, I want to note the following department, that we skip your visions and missions and all the things that we know, and we go straight to the meat, to the best of your ability. We should have been finishing your presentation at 12 o'clock, so do accept that part of your time was taken by the minister. So we will then still allow you to go till 12 o'clock the latest, including questions. Who is leading us? The minister said it's DDG Mugonyama. Is it still like that? Whoever it is, please go ahead. The floor is yours.
Good afternoon, Chair, or good morning, Chair. Mwaguma Gaipia, the acting director general. I'll be leading the presentation, Chair. I've shared the presentation. I just want to check if you are able to see it.
Yes, we are. You may go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chair, Honorable Mani, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, dear Deputy Minister Chikunga on the call, colleagues from the AGFA, Chair, I have with me the team from the Department of Transport who will be part of this presentation that we'll be making. We'll try to get to your presentation time frame that you have given us. It is a long presentation, which is around, I think, 130 slides. We will try to make sure that we deal with it in that time frame that you have given us. We will cover the high-level, Chair, the annual performance overview. We'll then deal with the key highlights in terms of programs of the department. a highlight on the selected indicators, our performance on conditional grants, governance issues, and lastly, to really deal with the issue around financial results, and lastly, the summary of the general, and then we'll then leave the issues of the DLCA out, and then as per the direction of the chair. Just going into the next slide, Chair, which is slide number 3, just focus on the kind of the year that we are reporting in terms of our progress, which is April 2021 to March 2022. And our report is really based on the deliverable, based on the current trajectory of the strategic plan, which is 2020-2025. And we therefore say our report then complies with all the relevant prescripts. And the next slide, which is slide number 5, Chair, talks to the analysis per program, which really looks at our overall organizational performance of the Department of Transport, which is sitting at 93%. And then it's breakdowns in terms of some of those programs within the department that have, in terms of how much have they achieved to be able to work to the overall number. Looking at maritime and administration, civil aviation and public transport performing at 100%, with maritime at 90% in terms of their strategic objectives, and then the 80s, which is ITP and rail, and then which road sitting at 75%. And the next slide, Chair, is really on our quarterly analysis per program, which I won't really get into detail. I'll take that as read. And then I'll move to the key highlights that we want to deal with in terms of the programs of the department, Chair, starting with program one, which program one, Chair, it really consists of the programs in the department, which is the Office of the Director General, the Office of the Chief Audit Executive, the Public Entity Oversight, Office of the Chief Operation Officer, and those of the CFO. The program at a high level deals with governance issues, Chair, which are aligned to the priority one in terms of the development of a capable state. And it really talks to high-level issues in terms of how we then respond to our parliamentary question, monitoring of the strategic plan implementation directive, and how do we deal with allegations of fraud, corruption, financial irregularities, and the kind of investigation that we do under the Chief Audit Executive as another assurance level, and the work that we do in terms of entity oversight, Chair, as that part of a program where we then make sure that we have an updated shareholder compact that we then sign with our entities, and how do we continuously monitor that on a quarterly basis in terms of really advising the boards of those respective entities through the minister for us to be able to have corrective actions in terms of how we then move forward. Moving in terms of our program future, which really talks to the issues around the ITP, which are covered from slide number 20 to number 50 in terms of those programs. And at a high level, Chair, there'll just be a few issues that I want to highlight, one being the issue around economic regulation in terms of the transport sector, which is aligned to the economic regulator bill, which we know it has already been processed in Parliament, where it has now passed from the National Assembly, going into the next house for it to be able to be adopted, so that we're able to then implement at a high level as a transport sector the issues around economic regulation across the sector. One of the key issues in terms of this program, Chair, which is in slide number 29, and honorable members, is really the issue around freight logistics strategy, which talks about how do we then implement the movement from road to rail in terms of our policy shift. And in that particular way, we'll understand that we are a policy department in terms of both developing the policy and the regulatory framework, but the implementation happens within in Transnet, with DPN, who are continuously having those engagements so that we are able to, one, add a broader rail network and within the branch lines, how do we then implement those kind of strategies aligned to the white paper national rail policy that was approved by cabinet in March. Moving to the next slide, which is one area in that particular space of underachievement, which is under the ITP on slide 30, Chair and Honorable Members, is really about the regulations on autonomous vehicles, which we didn't achieve as a result of prolonged stakeholder consultation. And how we introduce that in taking the process forward is to how do we then make sure that other existing legislation, we're able to then have a gap analysis in that regard to make sure that whatever we incorporate in the legislation is able to deal with those particular gaps that we have put on the table. I'll move, Chair, to Program 3, which is Rail Transport, just to highlight some of the key elements and of achievement of the year under review, which we have seen the Railway Safety Bill, which has been introduced in Parliament in 2021, which is an overarching funding legislation of the National Railway Safety Regulator, to then say, based on the couple years of implementation of the issue around rail safety regulation, what are the challenges and the key elements that we need to amplify as part of this legislation to make sure that when dealing with the issue of safety, we are able to make sure that the operators themselves are responsible in terms of this implementation. And one of the key allies in that particular program, we have seen the White Paper National Rail Policy that was approved by Cabinet in March 2022, which is the first ever overarching policy instrument that seems to create policy certainty around issues of private sector involvement in the railways, and how do we then implement principle around economic regulation for us to be able to unlock other alternative mode of funding for us to be able to implement this particular element. I'll then move, Chair, in just highlighting one element of an achievement in that program was the National Rail Bill, which was not able to proceed to cabinet for approval because there was a dependency with regard to the white paper national rail policy. Since now there's approval, there's been some progress in terms of that particular work, and we will anticipate that we're looking in achieving that particular priority in this current financial year. I then move to program number 4, Chair, which is road transport. Just to look at some of the achievement in that particular space, especially highlighting slide number 37, which really talks about rationalization around transport, road transport entities. And what we have achieved is really putting mechanisms together through the steering committee, where we have had really stakeholder consultation between the entities being the road traffic management agencies, RTMC and DLCA, in how we really want to achieve this particular space. And one of the key highlights is the National Road Traffic Amendment Bill, which we know it was in Parliament, and the process before the end of the financial year was how we then finalize the A list, and the bill has since progressed in terms of moving from the National Assembly to the NCOP. I'll then, Chair, move to a program, civil aviation, which is in slide number, covered under slide number 44 to slide number 48, which at a high level, the achievement there, Chair, which we want to highlight, it will be really on slide number 47, where in line with the implementation of the aviation safety strategy, we are seeing a decrease in terms of the fatal incident that were reported, especially between 1 April 2021 to 31 March 2022, when the decrease was really around 4 fatal incidents, if we were to compare it with the previous financial year. And looking at the element of cumulative fatalities, which were reported, we are therefore seeing a decrease in terms of those six compared in terms of the same reporting in terms of the previous financial element. I then move, Chair, to then highlight what then becomes our achievement in terms of the program, six on maritime, and really putting a key focus on our slide number 51 of the presentation, which really talks to the inroads that we have made regarding the corporatization of the Transnet National Ports Authority, where we are currently working with DPE to ensure that there is implementation, and DPE has already gazetted that on 30 July 2021, and the process of corporatization is really underway with regard to the Department of Public Enterprises has then progressed in terms of how we then make sure that the board is established and put forward in that particular space. One area of underachievement that we want to demonstrate in this program was the issue on the merchant shipping bill, which we had challenges, where there was a prolonged consultation with the state law advisor processes of up and down, and considering that the bill had to really go through two cluster processes, which is the ECED one based on the economic issues aligned to the bill, and secondly, the security issues through the ICTS cluster. That was our delay. We are foreseeing a movement, because those have been closed, of the bill being processed to cabinet in the current financial year. Moving to our highlights on public transport program, which is in our program 7 in terms of the highlights, Honorable Chair, I'll really focus on slide number 58 in terms of the work that we are doing on the integrated public transport network, where we are monitoring that particular work in our 9 cities, and to then say at a high level, we then have 7 of those cities that are really operational and anticipating the current financial year to have the 3 cities, which is Mangaung, Rustenburg, and Etiquini, besides the issues, obviously, launching their new services moving forward. So the key elements really in terms of looking at our slide number 64, considering that the elements of public transport covers between slide 56 and 66, I really look at our slide number 63 in the work that we are doing in making sure that we have developed a framework for the development of a public transport funding model, and how do we then look at this, the Texas Clipping ownership entity issue being finalized moving forward. Reflecting on just on those issues, in terms of the work that we do in terms of public transport operation and highlighting across the PTOG and the number of routes that have been subsidized in line with the kilometers and the trips across the board, and the work that we are doing on the taxi capitalization program, and how we then start to make sure that we put some intervention to then reimagine that particular program in terms of its implementation and moving forward. Chair. I'll then, Chair, in terms of the slides, move to the work that we are doing with regard to our selected indicators that cut, considered indicators that cut up across. This is the work, Chair, and honorable members, that we oversee in line with the implementation of the programs by both our implementing entities, which then becomes our state entities of the Department of Transport, and then secondly, the work that is done by the provinces. And that is really demonstrated across the programs of the department, which is the work that is done by PRASA in terms of the issues of the train set that have been rolled out in the priority corridors in line with the modernization program as aligned to the MTSF. And obviously, how do we then respond in that particular space in terms of the key priorities of government, including of the jobs created, and secondly, how does the previously disadvantaged groups, including of women, youth, and people with disabilities, benefit in that particular space, and the breakdown with regard to that. And our work in the road transport of consolidated indicators, such as around road transport, and the work that we really do with the Provincial Department of Transport, cutting from the issue around transport safety compliance, the issue of transport administration and licensing, and the issue of law enforcement, which we know they cut across the spheres of government in terms of how do we do that particular work. And some really cut to the work that is done by civil aviation, in terms of aviation, and looking at the work of AXA and the kind of program regarding to the jobs created and some of the interventions that have been made there in terms of the work of AXA and their build program. There are a number of considerable indicators which talks to the work that we are doing around public transport in terms of the issue of PTOG that I have talked to. We have covered an element, Chair, of the issues that then talks to our response to COVID, and then the CFO will then talk to that in terms of how we have responded to that particular aspect in relation to our financials when he does that particular element. We have included, Chair, the slides on performance of our grants, which starts from slide number 86 to slide number 104. And I think key to our live, Chair, is to then say, you will then see some non-alignment, obviously, between, especially with the grants that we are giving to the provincial local government in terms of our finances, and the CFO will then talk to that, especially because they are financial year in terms of both us as national government and the Ministry of Sphere. There is a run of 3 more months, which obviously happens towards the end of June in terms of that particular space, which is for us, I think, very important. And I think just moving to slide number 103 in that particular space, Chair, to then highlight the work that we have done in that particular space in terms of the work that we are doing in terms of the road asset management system, which is the work that we are working together with our municipalities. And the reason for us spend funds is really the previous issues of COVID that have really delayed the procurement as well as the implementation. And the CFO will then talk to that particular space. With regard to the transport operation in terms of the work that we do in terms of public transport operation grants, the amount transferred was around 7.1 billion and then spent is 6.5 billion. I think the contributing factors there is around the 4 contracts that are not running within Gauteng province, which are really contributory in terms of that particular space. We have, Chair, included our slides in terms of the presentation that really talks to the issues of around on governance issues, Chair, which really talks about how, as the department, we are able to put some compliance measures for us to be able to then deal with some of the issues to prevent issues where we make sure that the service delivery is in hand in that particular space. And I think that really talks to compliance to PFMA in terms of putting our institutional framework and governance issues moving forward. And I think those issues, Chair, talks to the issue around risk management and how do we deal with our risk management policy framework, how do we ensure the department that the issues of fraud and corruption are key at the attention of the department, including the plan, prevention plan that we put there, the measures including the scorecard and the fraud check in that particular space. How do we then fare around the issues of a code of conduct and the issue of declaration across the members of the department? And how are we then faring with the slide that we have put on our labor relations issue? And we then talks to how healthy is our organization in terms of, on slide number 109, we read the statistics of the number of misconducts and disciplinary hearings that have been conducted, finalized in the period under review. We have received 12 grievances lodged, and 8 of those were resolved, and 4 were not resolved, obviously, in terms of the process. And we have 1 a precautionary suspension which has happened in terms of the reporting period in slide number 9 of the presentation. Then obviously one of the elements, Chair and Honourable Members, talks to the issues that we have put in terms of our internal control and the work that internal control continues to do in terms of compliance, reviews, focusing on both the PFMA and Treasury regulations to make sure that non-compliance issues are then captured, even through the work that we do on our probity audit before some of the awards, to ensure that there is caution before we even get into trouble as a department, working together with them. And the work that we then do in terms of the internal audit function and the audit committee and our continuous engagement with regard to that. And then Chair talks to the issues of human resource issues, which really talks to the slides on 115 to 117 of the presentation, Chair, which at a high level reflect on the establishment in terms of the department and how we have fed in terms of really filling of the post. The minister has alluded to that in terms of our vacancy rate, which is still sitting at 24.3%. However, in the year under review, there have been some movement in terms of the three deputy generals which have been filled and which some have not really been filled for the past 10 years, which we see as a step in the right direction. And we've filled some SMS position around 17 in the department. The other challenge that obviously which really impacts on our vacancy rate is we then find some of the appointments of that becomes internal appointments and promotions, which then we make a progress in this particular space, but we then regress in terms of the other element, which is something that moving over time we'll be able to deal with that. And obviously we have had some terminations in terms of a resignation of around 16 employees, but to then report that the issue of the position of the Director General, we became vacant in November 2021 after the expiry of the previous incumbent, and the department has advertised that particular process, and it is in the process of filling the vacancy of the department. And the next slide, which is slide number 17, just talks to the issues of employment equity of the department as per 31st March 2022, and where do we then have to focus as part of our recruitment mechanism to be able to deal with those particular issues. At a high level, Chair, towards conclusion in slide 11, Chair, 119, I then just talk at a high level in terms of the report that was put by the Auditor General in terms of slide 122, to then confirm that in terms of the presentation that has happened, we have engaged with the Auditor General, where we are sitting at the department, which is an qualified audit. And the key issue, Chair and Honourable Members, was really the issue of consequence management, which the AG was really raising, which was one issue that has stand between us and the team audit. We've had several engagement with the AG, and you'll even see in the report of the audit, there was a demonstration that even though they've still reflected on this particular matter, out of the 13 cases that have been identified through the prior year, we're able to really move and address a number of issues. I think there were five cases that were left, but the AG still felt, because some of them are repetitive, is the key element that we have to. We have agreed, like Ms. Singwe said, that we will continue to have engagement with them to look one in the department, but then overall, the work that is happening within the portfolio and how we then continue to do that. And some of the elements that we have put together is to make sure that the Auditing Steering Committee continues to make sure that it look at our audit action plan and how do we then work together with the Office of the Auditor General for us to be able to build this relationship and be able to then improve on those particular matters. And really, the slide number 124, Chair, is really reflecting at a high level in terms of the other matters that the department wants to bring into the attention of the portfolio committee, really the investigation around the PPE on the tax industry, which is us engaging with the report of the SIU and some of the issues that a representative made in the department was full implementation, and how do we then start moving towards the issue of consequence management in the department. I'll then hand over, Chair, with your permission, to the CFO at a high level to just give us a presentation on our financial results. CFO?
Thank you, DG, and thank you, honorable members, and greetings to all honorable members, and greetings to our deputy minister in the platform. And if I can go to the next slide, Acting DG, thank you very much. This slide shows us the departmental receipt for the financial year 2021-22 and comparative to 2020 and 2021. You can see in the current financial year, our revenue is 51 million compared to the 1 million in the previous year. The big impact there is under financial transaction in assets and liabilities, which relates to the unspent fund that was returned by a railway safety regulator, just for the members to understand why there was a big jump on that particular line item. If I go through to the next slide, which will show us the expenditure at a high level,